and gentlemen, let's go. Let's go. We ain't got no time to waste. Let's go. Let's go. You are now listening to Jason Anderson, and you are in the
The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, a Monday edition of The Zone right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Jack Johnson, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. The next 4 hours, we've got you a number of things to get into and talk about today. We'll certainly talk some Royals baseball. We'll talk some Chiefs football today. We'll hang out with Mick Schaefer. We'll talk with Josh Kaiser. We will hear from Andy Reid, Nick Bolton, and Patrick Mahomes today as they will be talking because Phase 1 gets underway in the NFL offseason program, Phase 1 starting today. And we'll hear from Andy Reid. We'll hear from Patrick Mahomes, football's best meeting football's best on Saturday night. And we'll hear from Nick Bolton, who it is a consensus, right, across the board, 100% everybody wants Nick Bolton to be signed to a contract extension. It's one of the easiest sort of everybody on the same page conversations around Chiefs football, and it won't be something that'll be debated throughout this entire year and next offseason at all. I think everybody just agrees, right? Let's move on. Sign Nick Bolton, long-term extension, move on. Is that right?
I'm on board. Right? It seems like the most logical way to go about things.
No one will complain about giving big money
Not
to linebacker.
Not one
no
person. One.
No, it's going to be a consensus. There are very rare consensus in football. That's one of them. That's the only. I've never seen one person push back on that at all. But we'll hear from Nick Bolton. He has at least one more year with the Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes has another 25 years with the Chiefs. And we'll see how long Andy Reid has with the Chiefs. But they will talk today in the 11 o'clock hour. We will hear from him. And them. Josh Kaiser coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock. 913-912-4810 is the text line today. 913-912-4810 to join us and talk about the different things that we are discussing. And again, we'll get into the Royals. They lose the series to the Mets. They sit 10-6 on the season, a half game out of first place. They woke up Sunday in sole possession of first place. That was nice. 15 games in, waking up Sunday morning and going, let me look at the standings. Yeah, that's nice. Nice to go ahead and look at that team. Still the largest run differential in the American League, even though they had two of the three games where they scored a run. Scored two runs in two of the three games, but yet their margin, scoring margin is still the best in the American League run differential. So we'll talk some Royals baseball. Let's start with a little golf on the docket as Scottie Scheffler wins his second Masters in 3 years. And the conversation about, like, you know, is he going to leave the Masters if his wife goes into labor? Is he going to stay? How far into the round do you have to be before you go, I'll be there as soon as I can, honey, but I got four holes left. All right, I got a green jacket numbered. I got a green jacket to give to the child. How about this? I'll have the child measured for the green jacket. I've already got one for myself. I'll give the child the green jacket. Or you want the green jacket, whatever it is. How far along the way? Because what, after the 16th or 15th, he had the four-stroke lead. At that point, you're like, come on, I gotta finish the round. I'm up by four strokes. It was what I kept hoping for, is that somehow he would give a call, because I put a few shekels on Saturday night on Ludwig Oberg. Yeah. Outright win. I'm like, Scheffler is probably the smart bet. There isn't much value in there. He was like -125 to win the tournament.
You know what? It was a smart bet, Jason. Everyone kept thinking of it's not good odds. Well, it's good odds when he's going to win.
When he wins, yeah. Even if it's -800, it's still a smart bet if you win. You know, you didn't lose money. Well, I gained 80 cents, but you're 80 cents more. You're 80 cents richer now. So there you go. You didn't lose that $1.50 or whatever. So I threw a few shekels on Ludwig Oberg, and I felt good from time to time. And I could have cashed out, like, at the ninth hole, and I should have. That would have been smarter. Because, honestly, it was inevitable. Like, I felt yesterday, and I'm going to compare this to the Chiefs, and obviously they're different levels, because Mahomes has three major championships, and Scheffler has two. So he still he gets four chances a year, but he still only has two. We talk about the Chiefs, and the inevitability, the feeling of Mahomes and being inevitable, and that's sort of fractured in that Bengals game in the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago when, you know, they go into overtime and they lose in the second half, whatever happened with Mahomes and the offense where he, you know, turned into Russell Wilson this last year or the year before, whatever. And it was pretty brutal. But there was this feeling of inevitability. And maybe that fractured against the Bucs. Maybe the real crushing of inevitability was the Buccaneers game when they were going for back-to-back because it was just like they were winning. And now it there's a little bit of that returning with what we saw the last 2 years, that they're going to find a way. They should have lost to the Eagles. They should have lost to the 49ers, right? They'll find a way to get it done. Mahomes on one ankle. They don't have Tyreek Hill. The wide receiving core is terrible. Like all these different, the left tackle is a revolving door, and they win back-to-back Super Bowls. I had that feeling yesterday throughout the round. No matter how close, whether it was Morikawa or Homa or it was, you know, Oberg, it was like, it's kind of just sort of making a little drama for what the end result is going to be and that Scheffler is going to win. There's the feel of inevitability right now. And it's odd because he only has two majors. This isn't like, yeah. You know, he's not Rory where one major away from finishing a career Grand Slam and being the sixth ever golfer to do that. Like he needs three others to do that, but it's early in his career. And yet this early in his career, there's a feeling of like, he's just going to get it done. And that's how I felt all day yesterday watching that.
Yeah, he's 27 years old. And what's so special with him is he's the best ball striker on tour, but he's also maybe the smartest golfer on tour right now as well. The ability to get up and down, understanding that when Colin Morikawa, who I feel horrendous for because those two doubles, take those away, and he's right there. And
he still loses.
He still loses because he also choked on 18, yeah. But he made the huge bogey putt that actually saved him a lot of money.
It saved him a lot of money.
But he even laughed afterwards. You know, on 11, maybe don't put it in the water. But you saw
don't
what,
even come that close. Why even challenge?
Do you see what Scotty did? He just threw it out way right. He goes, I am not even going to take it on. It's not a birdie hole. I'm not even going to go for this. Why would I even put myself in that situation? And that's what I think separates. Some guys get very aggressive. Bryson DeChambeau got very aggressive, I believe, on 11 as well. He actually had a great shot.
He got aggressive. Shocker.
But he missed the two-footer. Those 3D-printed irons were great. Maybe 3D-print a putter because that dude was missing three-footers.
3D-print a punter. I like that.
But Scotty is just so good at getting up and down. He's the best ball striker. His driver was money all week. When he's playing like this, no one is going to beat him because there's not a single facet of his game that is lacking. There's not a single part that you're like, yeah, but if he improved here, then he would really take it to the next level. There's nothing. There's nothing.
It just has a feel of inevitability. Like I think it's so different and I'm not comparing the two because it's absurd when you're talking about 15 majors to two majors. And I do think there's a conversation to be had about us going down the route before of like, this guy, is he the next one? Because Brooks Koepka was winning tournament after tournament after tournament. It's like, is Brooks going to catch Phil? Is Brooks going to pass Rory? Is Rory going to catch Phil? Is Brooks going to get to double-digit majors? Is he going to be the fourth ever golfer to get to double-digit majors? Like, there is an element of, we love the next best thing.
Sure.
And the way that they're playing at the time just looks like nobody can beat them. But there's a different feel, like, to... And I mean, the way he goes about it, not a different feel that Scheffler now is going to be a guy that gets to seven majors or even six to catch Phil or whatever. But the feel is like Tiger was in your face, right? He was intimidating. The body was intimidating. You had the Tiger roar, right? I mean, he had an unrelenting drive that each major along the way, well, it was fine. I won. But that's only a little notch on the belt on my way to catching Jack. That's what matters. So you guys are just chum along the way.
Yeah.
And there was that feel in the back nine. It was like guys would crumble. While Tiger was making shot after shot, guys were crumbling under the pressure. We saw that all the time. And there was a little bit of that. The only person that didn't feel like sort of crumbled under the pressure was Oberg, and he made the bad shot. Like the guy who was just walking around going, oh, this is the Masters? What's the Masters? What's the major tournament? What's a major tournament? I'm not sure.
His
first
major.
Is this a big deal? Is like, if you guys are, why are you guys, this is just golf. Just golf. Oh, there's people watching. Hey, what's everybody? Yeah, what are they here for? You know, he just walked around like it was him and his friends playing a round of golf. It was absurd to watch him do that. And maybe, I guess if you got Patrick Mahomes in your corner, you probably feel pretty good about life, you know?
Yeah.
But like, Tiger had that sort of in your face, like he was coming after you and you could feel like the pressure. And Scheffler is like an unassuming sniper. Like Scheffler is like the Bible salesman that you let in the house and all of a sudden he steals everything from you. You're like, what the hell happened? I thought this guy was going to sell me a Bible. Gotcha. He's not going to sell you a Bible. He's actually stealing everything from you because he's so unassuming. You know, he's a guy that just like you look at him like, oh, you know, it doesn't look like Tiger. He's just walking around the course quietly destroying you.
It's Nikolai Jokic. It's Nikolai Jokic.
It's the body. Is that what you're saying?
And his post-game comments like Tiger. Really resonated with Nikolai Jokic.
I think to that point, you know, golf does need its next star, right? I was looking up here on the ESPN bottom line. Before I saw Scottie Scheffler, anything, his name being mentioned there, it was Tiger Woods and shooting 16 over, mm-hmm. right? Because Tiger Woods dominated the sport, as you said. He is recognized by anybody who even doesn't watch a golf or likes to watch golf. Right now, I do have the question of, you know, for golf, does it need somebody like Scottie Scheffler to take this and run with it and get to the top of the sport? Because for a lot of people that don't watch the Masters, you're going, I can't pick Scottie Scheffler out of a lineup. I don't know what he looks like. Tiger Woods, you obviously could. Mm-hmm. And I would even say like Phil Mickelson, you could. John Daly, you could. You could pick him out of a lineup. You recognize that, but that's still more of the old school golf right now. When I looked at the leaderboards the other day, I'm not a huge golf. I'm not going to act like I'm a huge golf guy. I recognize some of the names, but that's just because they are some of the best in the sport. And maybe we're being spoiled that, you know, we're witnessing something really great. It's just not Tiger, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's not Jack Nicklaus, where when you ask a random person about golf, those names come to mind. And, you know, maybe that is me being spoiled, saying I would love to have somebody dominate this era so that when I am going to watch a tournament, I'm watching the Masters, I'm going, I'm watching because of this guy. Not, well, there's a bunch of really good golfers and maybe this. Like, John Rahm won last year. Where did John Rahm finish this year?
He struggled.
He struggled. Mm-hmm. And it's like we didn't even think about that. We might have forgot that he won last year. And
if
that's
it wasn't
where
for him putting the jacket on Scheffler after. It was like, oh, yeah, John Rahm.
Yeah, it's like, oh, he did do that.
Yeah, those are the last three winners right there, those two guys.
And it just goes back to the point of when we're watching an individual sport, more than good golf or good competition, I think we like watching greatness. It's the same thing with, like, tennis. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember that one tennis match that went, what, a couple of days? I'm forgetting the names of who they were. But I remember those matches with Andy Roddick, Rafa Nadal, Roger mm-hmm. Federer, mm-hmm. you know, Djokovic, all those because they were the great ones. And I think for those that want to get in the sport, watch these sports, you want to see the reign of dominance. And hopefully, Scottie Scheffler can be that. Probably a little problem of it is he, as you said, he's kind of that salesman that just quietly kicks your ass. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's Scottie Scheffler. You can't pick him out of a lineup. He's just really good. Whereas Tiger or Phil or some of these guys, you knew who they were. When they were walking, it's like, man, I'm watching greatness.
Well, in team sports, I think parity, it drives a lot of the conversation. It drives a lot of the interest when you have parity, when you've got all these different cities that have a chance to win. Where individual sports, I think you need greatness. I think you need dominance because Tiger and Phil became a team sport. It became a, are you a Tiger guy or a Phil guy?
Yep.
Like, you hardly found anybody in between that was like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'm just a
Vijay Singh guy. Who made the cut, by the way. Vijay
Sergio
Singh made
Garcia.
The cut.
Yeah.
Even Sergio's not a Sergio Garcia guy.
Jason Day guy. I'm pretty sure that was
Patrick Conley. Yeah.
Rory.
Mike Weir. As a lefty, I was a Mike Weir
that's
guy.
That's fine. That's all good. Tom Kite. Who's a Tom Kite guy? Come on. Nobody? Am I alone with the Coke bottle glasses? No? All right, great. We move on. But Phil and Tiger became a team sport. It became a, are you team Phil or are you team Tiger? Do you want Phil to win? Do you want Tiger to lose? Are you rooting against Tiger? Are you rooting for Tiger? And there was that dominance of, okay, is he catching Jack? And that's, you know, that's what drove a lot of that. And Tiger being this newfound sensation that was just so good and was lapping the field at such a young age. And then it, you know, Phil came on. It's like, oh, you know, he's just so happy-go-lucky. He's walking around the course always smiling, loving, and Tiger's got the scowl, and he's mad, and he's trying to win, and he's trying to kill you, and he's got the fist pump and everything. And now we got, like, John Rahm. Scheffler, he's awesome. You know, Oberg was smiling. He was having fun. Oh, that's awesome. Homa. Morikawa.
That's fine. Well, there were a couple like that. That's why I think Brooks Koepka originally had so much because it was, okay, he doesn't care about anything besides majors. Then all mm-hmm. of a sudden he has that drive, and he's a little eccentric too. The different hair when he bleached his hair, and just he was kind of interesting, right? Bryson DeChambeau had that about him too. Bryson, he went from the lovable nerd to then all of a sudden him and Brooksy had his little thing, and then he bulked up and then he became kind of a villain. He still is a villain, but now he's becoming more of that lovable nerd who's just yoked now because of the whole iron situation. Like, I actually enjoyed him trying to tweak and 3D printing his irons and saying his driver is in, it's not even in English. It's not Titleist or Callaway. It's a Hebrew brand. Like, he's just so out there. It's kind of fun to watch Bryson DeChambeau, but he's not winning. So you're right. Scotty's just so unassuming. It is kind of like Nikola Jokic, though, because it's not the high-flying dunks. Mm-hmm. It's not the most entertaining. He's not the longest driver. He's not doing these things that no one has seen been done before. He just beats you because he's so damn consistent. Like, that's what made Bryson so fun or John Daly so fun, because the way they hit the ball. Rory, even to an extent, the way he hits the ball, the way he drives the ball. It's entertaining. It's different. It's unique. What's so unique, besides the fact he keeps winning?
Yeah.
Scottie Scheffler, he's just great. It's like Mario. Who picks Mario in any of those video games? You pick Wario. It's more fun.
Is that right? Is that what you did?
I picked the villains. Yeah, I was team villain.
Shocker on that one. And it's like it did have a Tiger feel to that round, though. It's like he just sort of went about his business, made some shots, and then everybody sort of stumbled around him. And then, you know, that back nine just, you know, birdie after he bogeyed early on in the round, and then it was just what, five of the next eight holes he birdied. I was like, okay, this thing is done. This thing is over. As we go to break, I'll ask this, and we just throw it out there. Does he get to Phil? Does he get six?
Yes.
You think he does? He's got two right now. He's 27. And he even said, what would concern me a little bit is he said yesterday, and he goes, well, you know, it's only natural that, you know, my priorities are going to change once I have a child. You know, like, yeah, right now I don't have a child. My whole life is golf. It's my wife and golf. Golf, golf, golf. Well, now he's taking care of the kid. He's not going to the range as much because he's got, you know, kid duty or whatever. Dad duty. Just dad. He doesn't have kid duty. He's not babysitting the kid. He's just being a dad, right? I always hate that when it's like, oh, dad's babysitting? No, dad's being a dad, okay? Sorry, so dad's not babysitting. Dad's being a dad. So his priorities will change to a degree, but does that make him lesser of a golfer? Does that take away the drive, where he even said yesterday that it's unfortunate because he doesn't have the excitement of winning, because golf is such an unsatisfying sport that it's all about, you know, not losing,
sure,
rather than winning. And he goes, as the days pass and weeks, I'll probably have a greater appreciation of this. That would scare me too, because then you get burned out of like only being unsatisfied. The wins are only a relief and the losses are a nightmare.
But that's, I think, all great athletes have that exact same
mindset. I don't disagree, yeah.
But to me, he's also in an era where who is going to compete with him?
Mm-hmm.
Like who is consistently competing with him week in, week out? Now, we thought about it with Brooks, but even when Brooks was in his prime, you had Brooks, you had Rory, you had Bryson. I think Dustin Johnson, I think to an extent, they're still going to win, I think, a couple here and there, but a lot of those guys went to the LIV Tour, and whatever your thoughts on the LIV, I'm not trying to have a massive argument now, but I do think there's something with the 54, with not playing as competitive of golf week in, week out, right? The top five guys were PGA, now you can say 6 to 10. Where were those guys? A lot of LIV guys. John Rahm, obviously, last year, he just went to the LIV Tour, but I do think there is something to that. Like, I think Max Homa was a really good golfer. He's not in the same class as Scotty. Mm-hmm. I think Oberger's your best bet, and he's 23 because he didn't you know, fold down the stretch. He didn't let the moment get too big.
One bad shot.
Wyndham Clark has won a few, you know, big tournaments, but
that's a hotel chain. That's not a real person.
He also sliced the bleep out of the ball on 18. That doesn't give me a lot of confidence that in another major he's gonna, if the fairway's not the size of two landing strips, he's gonna hit the fairway. Like, it's Scotty right now. I don't see another golfer in this current generation or era of however long you want to say it is competing with him. So, yeah, I do think he gets to Phil.
He's certainly young enough to get there, and you think about how long he could play golf. I mean, we've got guys that can play into their late 50s, early 60s, yeah. So there's a lot of time to get a couple of more. I would say the only thing going against it is, honestly, as somebody that off and on watches golf, it does feel like a little bit of a dice roll every time. Like, you go the last three Masters winners, so you have Scheffler, then you had Rahm, and then wasn't it Matsuyama?
It was Scheffler.
Well, before that, like, well, it was before Scheffler that. This year, but the, it, is he talking about Rahm Scheff before this year?
Yeah, before this year.
So Rahm,
before this
Scheffler, year. Matsuyama.
So yes. It kind of feels a little bit like a dice roll. Like, you, when I looked at, you can do that Masters draft, if you will. I'm like, yeah. Honestly, it might just be throwing a dart at the dartboard. There's obviously favorites, mm-hmm. but there's not that, for example, the Tiger, where it's like automatically he'll be top three back in his mm-hmm. prime, or he's going to win the damn thing. So it's more of a dice roll. He's got a lot of time to do it, but man, then it starts getting into like a Rory situation where dominated early and then now a little bit more quiet, I would say. Not as close to the top half of the leaderboard all of the time. I think he does get there just because of longevity there. He's so young, he's 27 years old. But you can have that long drought, and then the longer that drought goes, are you burned out at that point?
And injuries, too, because Brooks Koepka started getting injured, and then that sort of killed his game. And like you mentioned, I mean, it was about the majors for Brooks. Like, oh, I'm going to skip all these different events, and I'm just going to play in the majors. Okay, that's fine. I would say if Scheffler is going to do it, making hay over the next 2 years is important. He has played, this is an absurd number, 35 consecutive rounds of PGA Tour events. Zero of them over par. 35 consecutive rounds where he's hit par or better. Has zero rounds over par, 35 straight. Now, 2 months from now, we might be going, of course he's going to catch Phil because he's got four.
Yeah.
You know, next month in the, you know, the PGA and the, and in June and in the U.S. Open. Like, we might be saying, wow, this guy is the open away from having a career Grand Slam already. Or he, at that point, we'd be saying he's an open away from having a Grand Slam in the year. And that's certainly getting ahead of ourselves. But right now, the way that he's playing, the consistency that he's playing with, everybody in the field, more than likely over four rounds of golf at a major, is going to have a rough round. Oh, he shot a 75. And, you know, Scheffler's like, oh, yeah, I shot a 71. I shot a 70. I shot a 72. I shot a 69. Oh, there you go. I just won because I'm consistently putting together good rounds and I'm not having one blow-up round where it just kills your entire weekend.
Well, that was my point. With he's the best ball striker coupled with the fact he's the smartest guy. You see the conditions? I mean, the conditions at Augusta were atrocious. I mean, they were great for the fans, but yeah. I mean, you saw Max Homa on, what was it, 11 or 12, when he hit that second shot and went into the ground cover weeds.
Yeah, that was 12.
That was a beautiful
he
shot.
12, yeah.
You take a like, there's
the people, thing bounced like it was on the cart path.
That's my point. It was so firm. Like, the greens, how many just... Bryson had a couple of chips where he you're like, oh, that's decent. No, it's not. Hatton had one where like, oh, what up? That's perfect.
Yeah.
That is off the green. Scotty didn't do that. Scotty is just so dang smart and consistent, and that's why, again, you don't see those rounds. I knew we were going. That's why I was laughing. That no rounds over par because he just doesn't put himself in harm's way.
I'm going to lean yes. I mean, the percentage says no, and that's more of a, you know, the being on the fence, I guess, but I'm going to lean yes, and just because of how he's playing, and I think the LIV Tour, some less competition that's there, and the group that was sort of battling each other of a Koepka and a Rory and Spieth and Justin Thomas to a degree, that it was like, oh, Justin Thomas is the next go-around. I mean, the guy's missed the last two major cuts, Masters cuts, by falling apart on 16, 17, 18, on Friday, back-to-back years. He was like four over on Friday in the last four holes to miss the cut by one.
Yeah.
Last year, he did the same thing. In the last four holes, he was like five over to miss the cut by one. He's not exactly a guy that you thought he's going to win majors. Justin Thomas, it's just a matter of time. He's going to break through and win majors over and over. He's Phil. Like, he's going to get one, and then boom, he's going to take off and start winning majors. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure with Justin Thomas, but that was the group, right? That was the Spieth and the Justin Thomas and the Rory and the Koepka and this group of guys and some others thrown in there, and they're just going to exchange majors between each other. And now they feel like yesterday's newspaper. And Scottie Scheffler sort of feels like, okay, this is the guy now. Who's going to compete with him? Ludvig? Oberg? And we're saying that because he was fun? You know?
Yeah.
It's that feels like sort of a hope, right? That feels like sort of a, oh, this would be a fun one because he's just simply going around the course and just having a good time and just not letting the pressure get to him. And he makes a bad shot on 11, and he laughs with his caddy walking down there. where Morikawa dropped a damn it in the middle. The ball is flying. Damn it. Because he knew he just doubled two out of the previous three holes.
Yep.
Double nine and then double 11. And you're, or yeah, he doubled 9 and 11. And you're toast at that point from Morikawa. I'm going to say yes, he catches Phil Mickelson. Next one, and we'll go to break. Career Grand Slam?
Oh, does he get it?
Does he get it? Sixth golfer. There's only been five ever.
Again,
you're
going
to go yes, okay. I think, are all in on Scheffler.
Yes, I think he's that good, and I think the era is down enough for him to get it.
I'll probably say yes as well. I'm with Sterling here. I think the era is kind of at a low point that he has a chance to go and dominate.
And I know Phil doesn't have one, so it's hard to say, like, well, if I think he's going to catch Phil, then he's going to get a career Grand Slam, because obviously you can do that, because that's Phil. I'm going to say yes, still. I think over the next two or three years, we'll see him win a number of these because he's just playing that good and fully acknowledging that there's an element of maybe being prisoner of the moment. There's also an element of wishful thinking to have that guy that becomes a dominant force that people are watching and going, can Scheffler do it again? Is this the one that he gets the career Grand Slam? We're watching. Is this the one where he finally gets to six? Okay, we're watching. And then more after that, can he get to 10, right? Who knows? Maybe he ends up with three in his career. Maybe his child changes things because he's made tons of money in his career and he's already got two green jackets and he goes, you know what, I'm loving life now. Maybe I don't need to go to the range today. Maybe I'm just hanging out with the kid. Well, and Ludvig Åberg is like, I don't know what's going on. I'm not sure. Do I go to the range today? I don't know. Video games? I have no idea. Is there a golf tournament next week? He was awesome to watch play. We'll take a time out. We'll talk some Royals coming up next. Text says, why do you want to see somebody dominating golf, but most people don't want to see Mahomes keep dominating the NFL? And I think that's the difference between the individual sport and team sport. Like team sport, people get tired of it pretty quickly. Individual sport, you don't have the civic pride that and people got tired of Tiger, too. Like there were plenty of people that were rooting against Tiger. Like it was anti-Tiger, and that's where a little bit became the, well, I'm going to root for Phil. Because that might be the biggest competitor to knock off Tiger. 913-912-4810. This is a good text. Is it? Talk more K-State. Just kidding. I love the golf chatter. Long-standing joke for almost going on 5 years now. 913-912-4810 is the text line. The Royals lose the series over the weekend to the Mets where they break out the bats for 11 runs with an odd lineup. And a lineup that I thought, really? Like, this is what we're doing today? And they score 11. And then your typical lineup scores a total of 2 runs on Friday and on Sunday as well. I'm obviously, we've talked about how exciting this is and how, you know, there feels to be some, you know, some staying power, all of that stuff with what's going on. Injuries happen. And it's one of those things to where you just got to get through it. You got to find a way to get past it. Injuries are going on, especially with pitchers all over the baseball right now. With Spencer Strider going down, that's a tough one for the Braves. They've got to overcome that. Bobby Miller, shoulder inflammation for the Dodgers. They got to overcome that. Luckily, they've got, you know, another all-star team ready to go. Salvi would be a huge blow if he were to miss some time. And I'm worried about missing some time. I don't think it was a knee contusion like they were talking about. And they even said it with a groin because he did the splits. And by the way, Marte, he slid on the fair side of the line. He slid inside the third baseline. Okay, Salvi was set up on the inside of third baseline, giving him a path to the outside. And when you see Marte slide, the line, the chalk is to his right. That's not accidental. I'm sorry, that's not accidental. He saw the ball. He felt the ball coming in. He slid. He could have gone around that, whatever. And then he acts like, oh, my bad. Bleep you, dude. It wasn't your bad. You did that on purpose. And you can't slide on the inside part of it and then act like, oh, it was an accident. No. I mean, he gave you the outside part, which is required, right? He gave you the lane, and he would have tagged you out. The last 14 games for Salvi. And the first two games, it's like, oh, God, he's looking old. He looks old. These first two games against the Twins, Royals weren't scoring runs, and it's like this Vinny's batting third, and he's struggling. There's two games in, right? Salvi looks old, and he's still swinging at everything. Why would anybody throw him a strike? Just throw him breaking stuff on the outside. And And in the last 14 games, he's OPSing over 1,000, four home runs, 15 RBIs. He's been crushing the ball and playing a really good, you know, catcher as well, playing pretty good, pretty damn good backstop. So that's concerning because of the good feels for this team. If he goes on the 15-day or misses a little bit of time with a groin injury, and when somebody's back there as a catcher, the groin's important. And so that's a concern because you know injuries are going to happen. Just how do they overcome this if it is Salvi, someone who's that spiritual leader, that emotional leader, if he's not around for a couple of weeks?
It's brutal if you lose him for, you know, a month or a month plus, just because the way he was hitting right now. And, you know, I think we're at this point in Salvi's career where you can put the term, well, what if he stayed healthy? Think about some of the injuries in his past. He slipped on stairs and tore his knee up.
That was Matt Stairs, by the way, that he slipped on. He was climbing over Matt Stairs, and he slipped.
Pinch hitter.
He has that injury, right? Yeah. He's got Tommy John as a catcher. He has the blurriness in his eye. He's got the vision problem. And then you look at a situation like this, it's like it wasn't like he was running the second base like Luis Robert was this past weekend, and something blows out. He ruptures
Mancata,
something.
Yeah.
Yoan Moncada. It's just a collision at the plate, and he gets stretched out, and this happens. And yes, I think not just as a leadership standpoint, but as your four-hole hitter, losing him when you are 10-6 this early on in the year, it would be a really big blow to this offense. Now, Freddie Fermin, it's a big spot for him. Mm-hmm. If he can step in for 2 weeks here and they can weather the storm, that's huge. But it's also like, well, what is he going to look like when he's back? You know, he was rolling at this point. Now you have however amount of time off, and you're expected to come back and be the four-hole hitter. It's a big question they're going to have to answer.
Before I get to what happens if he were to miss time, going to what you said just defensively as well, which I think has been very impressive against smaller sample size, his framing metrics his framing metrics have been the 90th percentile. Like we always,
he's plus one, right?
Yeah, plus one.
Much better.
Called strikes above average, 87th, which is kind of that. And then even blocking is 84th percentile. Mm-hmm. Again, his defense has been phenomenal this year.
And with Angel Hernandez, his pitch framing, he takes the pitch and the strike and then puts it over to the side. And then Hernandez is like, oh, well, that's a strike. Yeah, you take it actually in and move it over to the right.
Well, which is interesting, though, with Freddie Fermin, actually, he didn't help Stratton last night. Like which I know we'll get to, but like
neither did the non-robot ump.
Well, agreed.
Chris Siegel.
But I'm watching him and I'm like, Fermin, why
I'd rather have Jason Siegel. But go ahead, Fermin.
But I'm like for me, I think Fermin's known as a good defensive catcher, but he wasn't last night. And you're sitting here going, Salvi's looked great back there all season long. Fermin has, quite frankly, not. That does make me nervous, not just offensively, but defensively as well. And then also, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Austin Nola, the who's in the minors right now, is also injured. So you're looking at your backup catcher, the catcher you brought in for insurance. Well, if he's injured too, where do the Royals go?
Sounds like MJ Melendez. Get the catching gear out. But I'm joking, obviously.
But what would they do? Where do they? Is it Porter? I mean, where do they go from here?
I'd imagine it's Porter because of the way he's hitting in Omaha, and I think he's got experience last year, but man, I just don't know how long you could go without Salvador Perez in this lineup and expect to have the same sort of production. I mean, it isn't the absolute worst time for one of your star players to miss time, because this also shows just how good this lineup can be. I mean, Salvador Perez isn't, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. In the middle lineup, where if you lose Bobby Witt Jr., I mean, that lineup is completely different. Salvador Perez, of course, is a huge part of that lineup, but it's going to show just how important Vinny Pasquantino has to be, how important MJ Melendez has to be, Nelson Velasquez, even guys like Hunter Renfro. And, you know, it's good that this next three-game series, maybe they get good news today, and strained groin. He's going to miss a couple of games. It's a very minor strain. We're just going to get him off his feet. You play Chicago, with or without Salvador Perez, you're likely going to win that series. Don't want to get too ahead of myself, but the White Sox have two wins, right? So there are worse times to lose your four-hole hitter. But it made the loss yesterday that much worse. Yeah. It's like you get a great outing from Cole Reagans, just like Granke back in his prime. They can't get him any runs. You know, Alec Marsh has done arguably the worst. He's 3-0. They've won. Reagans is 0-3, or they've lost all three games he started, or four games. And that's the frustrating part. And then you lose Salvador Perez. It's like, man, he was the only guy yesterday that seemed to have a good read on Buteau, whatever it was. And before that, he hit well in game two, he hit well in game one, and he's been hitting well really ever since the first two-game stretch for the Royals, right. And that is a gut punch. But now it's put up or shut up time for a guy like Freddie for me.
Yeah. Of the four Cole Reagan starts, twice he's left the mound with no runs given up. And he's yet to pick up a win this year. Lugo's been good, so it's not like, well, Lugo's 2-0. Yeah, he's got 2-0 with a 1.45 ERA. Yep. So he's actually been pretty good. But Alec Marsh is the funny one. That
they give him the run support.
Like, oh, Marsh is on the mound. Let's go get 10. Yeah. Let's go get 10, guys. Let's go score some runs. And the frustrating part about, you know, yesterday is, I mean, if an umpire has a different strike zone than just your typical here's your box and it's, you know, a strike or a ball. If, all right, the umpire calls a low strike, but he calls it in the entire game. He's been calling the low strike. Okay. He's not given the, high and outside corner to, you know, the righties, high and inside to lefties. He's just not calling it there, right? So you just have to adjust to that. It'd be one thing. If it wasn't for the fact that Cole Reagans was getting the calls during the game and other pitchers getting the calls during the game, that Chris Stratton threw three strikes to Jeff McNeil that were all called balls that were strikes in the game. Mm-hmm. That's the frustrating part, is you're out of the inning. McNeil never took the bat off his shoulder, just sat there for five pitches and got walked, with three of them being strikes and three of them being in the same spot. The same spot. One of them was called a strike. Another one in the exact same spot was called a ball. But somehow one of us is a strike. It's inconsistent in the at-bat. Like, that's what's absurd, is that those were strikes. And should Stratton have done better? Should he have not have walked four guys? Yes, of course, he should not have walked four guys. But even to Nemo, you know, two of those were strikes that were called balls. And other pitchers during the game were getting that call. And that's a frustrating part. And we talk about the technology to be able to avoid this now. But, you know, it's not even Angel Hernandez. Like, Angel Hernandez did the exact opposite with, you know, Wyatt Langford, bases loaded, one out, Wyatt Langford up there, five pitches come in, and Langford never swings the bat because all five of them were balls. All five. It was a 2-0 count. There was a pitch that was outside that Wyatt Langford took, strike one. The next pitch was even further outside, didn't swing, strike two. The next pitch was the most egregious miss in the StatCast era that Angel Hernandez called strike three, 7 inches outside of the strike zone. 7 inches. That was called a ball in our, you know, 9U tournament we played this weekend. All right, that was called a ball. It was like, oh, you know, it was a good spot. Good spot. Come on, here, find the strike zone. That's all right. Ooh, that was close, buddy. That was a ball this weekend, and it was a strike with Angel Hernandez. Like, that absurdity when you see that called a strike, and then Chris Stratton versus Jeff McNeil, those three are called balls. Like, how do you know what the strike zone is? That to me is the robo-ump, is that if you're a batter or a pitcher, you know what the strike zone's going to be. We don't have to guess. Oh, I'm going to take that pitch. Oh, it was called a strike. Ooh, that was called a ball.
What's interesting, too, is Chris Segal was actually phenomenal in his game outside of the eighth inning.
Because those were strikes throughout the game, well, and then they were balls.
I don't know if anyone ever goes to umpire scorecards. It's very fun to watch on Twitter. They broke it down. He was 95% overall accuracy, but then you look at the eighth inning, and it was just brutal.
It was terrible.
And that's what it came down to.
At least the eighth inning wasn't a big deal. At least it wasn't an impactful inning.
If it looks at the overall favor, which they do, just, you know, how they break down, who got helped by the missed calls, the Mets were 1.47 runs for the Mets. Oh. How much did the Royals lose by in this game?
A single run.
Yeah. So, again, it's one of those frustrating situations where you can have a really solid game, and then the ump just in the eighth inning decided that, you know what? No. Let's just try and bring this thing down. And all of the three most impactful calls went against the Royals. One of them actually included in the sixth inning. The one miss he had prior to the eighth was a 3-2 count. Ball was called a strike on Mikel Garcia.
That's right. So. Yeah, I do remember that at bat, too.
Well, you got to play, both sides as well, because I think it was game two, James McArthur was in the game. It was 3-0 on, I think it was Brandon Nimmo. He threw ball four. It wasn't close. And then that went from first and second, one out, to two outs and runner at first. Mm-hmm. And that then eventually kept Pete Alonso on deck. So then you look at game three. You know, people can be upset with Chris Stratton. He does deserve blame, right? If you are missing, because there were a couple of bats he wasn't close. He was missing all over. And umpires, it tails all the time. If you are missing everywhere, they are not going to give you the benefit of the doubt of a strike. However, you also look at the bat to McNeil, where he didn't take the bat off his shoulders. If just one of those is a strike, the game plan at the plate changes mm-hmm. for the hitter. That's what's lost in all of this, is if you're up there and it's 0-0, you know, the Royals are now down one, or it's runner at second, and it goes to 2-0, I'm not swinging until he throws a strike. If one of them is a strike and it's 1-1, it changes. It changes the complexion of the at-bat, and that's what Chris Stratton then couldn't get over, is then he couldn't find the zone, and he's missing there. Then Bader, of course, has the swinging bunt that Garcia can't handle. It's like that is how it's always going to go. But I've looked at baseball now, and, you know, I do want a human element in the game. But also, there has to be at some point a form of accountability.
Yeah.
There are good umpires in this game. They're also really bad and arrogant umpires, where they go, that's what I saw, and I don't have to answer to it. I don't have to answer any questions, and I know my job's secure because of the umpires union. I don't know if there was a threat of, if you're bad enough like Angel Hernandez, we can fire your ass. Maybe they take it in moments like that a little bit more seriously, or maybe more sensitive to the fact that you just ruined the game for a pitcher who, by the way, is pitching for his career, for his job. Mm-hmm. If Chris Stratton doesn't improve and we get to June, he's got a 6.57 ERA. He's losing his job. An umpire like Angel Hernandez, or in a situation like Chris Siegel, if you blow call after call after call, you're still fine. Mm-hmm. You don't have to answer to it. Oh, it's a human game. He framed the pitch good, and that was outside to me, or that wasn't a strike, or that was a strike to me. And that's why there is such a divide between the fans and players, managers and umpires, is because umpires are this protected group, whereas managers and players are not. If they don't perform well, they lose their job. Umpires can be as bad as they want, as arrogant as they want. They will not lose their job.
And I don't know who the umpire was, and we'll take a break, but I don't know who the umpire was, and I should go back and look and what even the situation was or who the pitcher was. But there was video over the weekend of a guy walking off the mound, and, you know, they always have to check the hands, right? The home plate umpire walked over to him and said, my bad, I missed that. You know, just walked right over to the starting pitcher, and the pitcher was like, all right, you know. But, I mean, that accountability of like,
that's great.
Dude, that's my bad. I totally missed that one. Don't worry, because if you put it there again, it's a strike. So you know that that's not where my strike zone is. I just missed that one. I got you next time. That was a miss. That's not a different strike zone of what I'm calling the rest of the game. Because that's also letting them know you can expect this. Now, instead of going, well, that was called a ball last time, so is it a strike now if I throw it? Yes, it will be. My bad. I missed that one. Because that's going to happen too. We'll take a timeout, come back, more so next. All right, wrapping up this hour, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back and we'll talk some more Royals, but also get into some Kansas City Chiefs as the draft coming up next Thursday. Chiefs talking today with phase one of OTAs going on. And Andy Reid, along with Nick Bolton, along with Patrick Mahomes, will be talking in the next hour or so. And we'll hear from them and see what they have to say about phase one starting. See what Mahomes has to say about meeting Lionel Messi. And also, one of his receivers may or may not play the first couple, four-plus games. So we'll hear from them coming up this hour. Josh Kizer coming up at noon. Mick Schaefer at 1 o'clock. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll continue rolling along. Is there a concern with the bullpen? Only a couple of guys? I mean, we're talking about Stratton getting squeezed, but, you know, leverage situations. We'll talk about that next.